I want to acknowledge my co-author on this paper, Rich Charnigo, and announce that I have no relationships to disclose. The National School Lunch Program is really the linchpin of federal child nutrition programs, serving over 30 million children daily in fiscal year 2007. And 60% of those kids received meals at free or reduced prices. So it's really, really a critical program for low-income children. However, the school lunch program itself, it seems to me, is often overlooked compared to the attention paid to competitive foods in schools. And while I certainly am not going to say that getting vending machines and snack bars and junk food out of schools isn't an important goal, kids get a lot more calories from the school lunch than they do from anything else they eat at school. And so I think more and more attention needs to be paid to what's served in the school lunch. And this issue is receiving a lot of attention right now in the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act, which many of you know Congress failed to pass before the election. They're talking about bringing it up in a lame duck session. I have my doubts as to whether that's going to happen. This bill's dragged out so long. But it is definitely an issue which is reaching a lot of national, getting a lot of national discussion right now. And in my work with food service directors, I've come to realize they really face a challenging financial balance. I've become a real big advocate of lunch ladies. They have to break even. They're not supposed to make money, and they certainly can't lose money. And they're very much restrained by how much reimbursement they get from the federal government for the meals. So their financial parameters are very limited to produce a wholesome, healthy, and hopefully tasty lunch for kids. They also know that economies of scale are helped by higher participation rates. So one of their goals is to get lots of kids to participate so that they can maintain that financial stability that they need to in the school lunch program. So the question that we had was, given those sorts of financial pressures, are schools that have high percentages of kids with free and reduced lunch getting the same quality of meals of kids at schools with low percentages of free and reduced lunch qualifying students? And the data set that we use is the School Nutrition Dietary Assessment. This is the third in a series of studies of school food by the USDA Food and Nutrition Service, contracted out to Mathematica. It's a multi-stage sampling design. They looked at 129 school food authorities, or essentially school districts. Within those, almost 400 schools, and 2,700 students from those schools conducted dietary recalls. The data that we're analyzing comes from the menu surveys, looking at what's actually offered, and the dietary recalls, which tells us what the kids eat out of what's actually offered. And then we conducted bivariate and multivariate tests of association to explore that relationship between the quality of the meal and possible things such as free and reduced lunch status that might be associated with it. So, how do you measure dietary quality? I mean, that's kind of a tough one. And when I looked at the SNDA data set, there were pages and pages. I mean, it's a huge, huge study. So there are just unbelievable numbers of variables to look at. So these are the ones that we pulled out. And they really fall into two categories. These first three have to do with choices that food service directors have in putting together a menu. The number of fruits and vegetables served, the total number of items on the menu, and the number of fresh fruit options served. The next set of indicators are actually things that are regulated by law. So by law, school food authorities are supposed to serve no more than 30% of calories from total fat, and I think it's 10% of calories from saturated fats. So that's what these unweighted percent of total fat and unweighted percent of saturated fat are. The last two categories here are what the kids actually eat. These are weighted based on the dietary recalls. So that gives us both what is offered to the students and what they're actually eating. So this is what we chose as measures of dietary recall. And obviously there were other things that we looked at and other things that we considered, but these are the ones that we thought out of the data set gave us the best picture of what kind of meal was being served. The kind of things we think might be predicting these dietary outcomes were the proportion of students receiving free or reduced price meals in the school. The credentials, we know there's something going on with food service directors. They're the ones who are making these decisions about what to offer at lunch. And so we looked at things like their education level, the years of experience, and what popped out as being most important was actually whether or not they're credentialed. It's simply a yes or no, they have some sort of advanced credentialing in nutrition and dietetics. We also looked at meal participation rates. Those food service directors are telling us that that's what's driving a lot of how they design the menu, so we thought it was important to look at that. And we also know that the level of the school makes a big difference in what's offered. Anybody who's been in different school cafeterias, you see real differences in the kinds of lunches being served, and we'll talk about that. The school level issue is a very interesting one, and if you look at this, the schools can be sort of broken down, it seems to me, into two categories, the elementary schools and the middle and high schools. And in the elementary schools, what we see some big differences here in these, I guess it's the fourth and fifth columns, between elementary schools and middle schools and the numbers of fruits and vegetables served and menu counts. And we also see differences in elementary schools and high schools, but there's not that much difference, not a statistically significant difference, between middle schools and high schools. So there's something that goes on somewhere between that fifth and sixth grade where we start seeing a change in the meals that are served to kids. Oop, wrong way. So then we wanted to look at the free and reduced price status. And what we find is that the free and reduced price status meals is associated in a negative way with the total number of items served, both at elementary school and high school levels. But I want you to look a little bit at the volume of difference. So with high schools, you see the coefficient for free and reduced price is 18.28 as opposed to 4.69 for elementary schools. So clearly it's making a bigger difference. The free and reduced price status is making a bigger difference at the high school level, although we'll see there's some other things going on here. And then there's one thing that pops out as significant on the unweighted percent of saturated fat. Now you remember I said that the federal guidelines were 10% of calories can come from saturated fat. You can see that none of the school levels are quite meeting this, but they're all pretty close. And actually high school seems to be doing a little bit better, but that is one place where free and reduced price status seems to make a difference. When we look at food service credentialing, again, it's all in the high school that things are happening, and credentialing does seem to improve, increase the number, or be associated with an increased number of fruits and vegetables served, an increase in the menu count, and a decrease in the percent of calories coming from total fat. But again, that's just at the high school level. Meal participation rates, the thing the food service directors tell us is what's really driving it, that's what the data is showing us here. Particularly at the high school and also at the middle school level, meal participation rates, if it's higher meal participation rates result in lower numbers of fruits and vegetables served, smaller menu varieties, and lower numbers of fresh fruit, then an increase in at the high school level with the unweighted percent of calories coming from total fat. So when we put this all into a multivariate model, again, we see most of the things happening at the high school and the middle school level. Again, free and reduced lunch is a significant variable at the menu count variable in elementary schools, but you see a whole lot more going on in the high schools and middle schools. But the other thing I want you to notice is where on this chart the red is, the significant associations, and they're all on that those top three things, which I said were that first category of things that aren't mandated by law. So, and I think that's a pretty important distinction that I'll talk about here in a second. So, this is one of those cases where when you don't find many significant relationships, and anybody who's done, you know, run stats, you're like, oh God, I want to find something significant. I was kind of happy. You know, there's all sorts of evidence here that there's not a significant relationship between the percent of kids getting free and reduced price meals and the quality of those meals. And in keeping with the theme of this conference, to me, that's a measure of social justice. The poor kids are getting the same quality of meals, at least by these standards, as rich kids. That doesn't mean the meals are great, but they are certainly of comparable quality. Schools with lower meal participation rates, particularly at the middle and high school levels, tend to offer students more options. And this goes back, and we'll talk about this in a second, to that what the food service directors are telling us. We have to offer more options to get people to actually eat the lunch. And credentialing of food service directors does seem to be important, but only at the high school level. So these associations of the independent variables with dietary quality indicators were mostly limited to this issue of menu variety. And you could certainly argue that the number of items on a menu isn't as clear an indicator of meal quality as, say, the total number of fruits and vegetables or the amount of fresh fruit that's offered. But it does seem to, the idea of offering people choice is an interesting one. So it's a quality, whether it's a nutritional quality issue or just a meal quality issue is another question. But the legally mandated standards, such as fat and saturated fat content, don't seem to demonstrate these same sorts of associations. So where food service directors have some flexibility, these external variables seem to be affecting it. When policy is the overriding influence, they don't seem to be important. So a few limitations to this research. There are lots of different ways we could have measured meal quality. And I expect some of you would say some of the variables we chose weren't the ones you would have chosen. And the beauty of a large data set like this is, you know, you can go out and do the same sort of study, redefining meal quality how you think it's most important. My general focus, and I certainly don't have a training in nutrition and dietetics, is the goal is to get kids to eat more fruits and vegetables. So that's why we focused on those particular variables. These, again, are associations, not causations. It's a cross-sectional study. And perhaps the most serious limitation is, despite spending hours and hours and hours combing through the list of variables, we couldn't find any sort of variable capturing the percentage of kids at any given school or school district of different racial backgrounds. And that's a really important limitation, because we know that ethnicity is closely tied to all sorts of dietary outcomes. So, a few conclusions. Generally good news about equity in the school meal program. The school food service needs to balance the offering of high-quality nutritional meals with offering meals that students will purchase. So when the demand is high, there's less imperative to offer meals above the minimum requirements. And that's why you see the things that aren't those legal requirements start to suffer when meal participation rates go up. So mandating meal quality standards does seem to make a difference. Having those requirements, even though the schools aren't quite making it with the percent of fat and saturated fat, it is significantly closer than it is on these other variables. Okay, thank you.